Many of us have become comfortable with online meetings and virtual gatherings. Our church services are streamed and Bible studies take place in a Zoom meeting platform. This has led many to question, can our congregation's spring voters meeting be conducted online? Today's topic answers that question and provides a 10,000-foot overview of how a congregation can conduct a voters meeting online.
Hello, I'm Todd Jones with the Michigan District, and in today's podcast, I'm going to be talking about congregational meetings in an online environment. As the weeks and months, it's hard to believe it's been months, drag on in this time of social distancing, more congregations are facing the necessity of congregational meetings. Many congregations are mandated by their bylaws to have a congregational meeting in the fall and in the spring. For some, the meeting includes important items like the election of officers and the approval of a budget. We've received several requests here at the district office about the subject of conducting an online or virtual congregational meeting. The post today addresses two questions. Can it be done legally if it's not provided for in the bylaws? And how can we conduct a meeting online? By way of introducing the concept of an online congregational meeting, it should be noted that this topic is being discussed in the environment of a social distancing order, stay-at-home order due to COVID-19. The recommendations are in the context of the extraordinary circumstances in which we find ourselves. The recommendations do not present a path for permanently adding the option of an online meeting to the congregation's bylaws. The conclusion of the document offers some suggestions for the addition of online meetings to the bylaws, but this is an overview of virtual congregational meetings driven by the two overarching questions: is it permissible when it's not specifically outlined in the bylaws, and how can it be done? First, is it permissible? To understand the question, it is helpful to visualize the hierarchy of organizational authority. While we understand absolute authority belongs to God and His Word, for the purpose of this article, we will address these subjects in the eyes of the state. In the Law and Order blog, laworderblog.com, it provides a graphic which assists in the visualization of hierarchy and organizational authority. And in that graphic, you will notice that state and federal laws, we call them statutes, have the ultimate authority in the establishment of an operational boundaries for the organizational meetings. That is, state law trumps Robert's Rules of Orders and even our bylaws. The second level of authority is the congregation's Articles of Incorporation, the bylaws, and the Constitution. Because the congregation has organized as a corporation in the state of Michigan, it has voluntarily subjected itself to certain statutes, including the Nonprofit Corporate Act. Third on the list is the organizational's bylaws. It's common practice in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to actually divide the authority in this level into two documents, the Constitution and the bylaws, with the Constitution having authority greater than the bylaws. Fourth on the list are the parliamentary authority. We know it as Robert's Rules of Orders, but there are many Robert's Rules of Orders, many versions of parliamentary authority that are available. Just Robert's Rules happens to be the most familiar. And finally, there are the special rules adopted by the organization's voting assembly. And so there's a hierarchy of authority within the congregation. And that's important because when you look at Robert's Rules of Order, for example, you will note that it does not permit meetings to occur other than face-to-face, unless it is explicitly written in the Articles of Incorporation or in the bylaws of the organization. And so many congregations default to thinking that it's not available, it's not an option for them. However, when we look at state law, specifically, the state of Michigan allows nonprofits to conduct technology-mediated meetings unless otherwise prohibited by their Articles of Incorporation or bylaws. The Nonprofit Corporation Act, Act 162 of 1982, addresses the following issues related to technology-mediated meetings. I'm looking at 450.2405 if you want to look it up. It addresses the issues of shareholder, member, or proxy holder participation in meetings by conference telephone or other means of remote communication. What are the conditions? Participation as presence in person at the meeting, participation and voting by remote communication. The Act continues to describe the details in sections 405(1) and following. I quote, "Unless otherwise restricted by the Article of Incorporation or bylaws, a shareholder, member, or proxy holder may participate in a meeting or shareholders or members by a conference telephone or other means of remote communication that permits all persons that participate in the meeting to communicate with all other participants. All participants shall be advised of the means of remote communication. Participation in a meeting under this section constitutes presence in person at the meeting. Unless otherwise restricted by any provisions of the Articles of Incorporation or bylaws, the Board of Directors may hold a meeting of shareholders or members that is conducted solely by means of remote communication, subject to any guidelines or procedures adopted by the Board of Directors, the shareholders, members, and proxy holders that are not physically present at the meeting of the shareholders or members. They participate in the meeting by means of remote communication and are considered present in person and may vote at the meeting if all the following are met. The corporation implements reasonable measures to verify that each person that is considered present and permitted to vote at the meeting by means of remote communication is a shareholder, member, or proxy." So the first thing you got to do is you got to make sure it's permissible if you make sure the people who are voting are actually members. Secondly, the corporation implements reasonable measures to provide each shareholder, member, or proxy holder a reasonable opportunity to participate in the meeting and to vote on matters submitted to the shareholders or members, including an opportunity to read or hear the proceedings of the meeting substantially concurrently with the proceedings. Secondly, you've got to make a reasonable effort to include, provide opportunities for all voting members to have an opportunity to participate in the discussion and to vote. You'll notice in both of these sections here, the word reasonable is highlighted because it doesn't mean that you have to ensure that every member can participate, can vote. You just have to take reasonable effort. Third, if any shareholder, member, or proxy holder votes or takes other action at the meeting by a means of remote communication, a record of the vote or other action is maintained by the corporation. So in other words, the third is you've just got to keep records of the votes that take place. So under state law, it is permitted for your congregation to have an online meeting, even though it is not stipulated in its bylaws. An online meeting of the Voters' Assembly may meet with the following provisions. Make sure all voting members receive notification. Provide a reasonable access to the technology to attend and participate in the meeting. As in any meeting, majority rule and there's minority rights. That's a big thing for Robert's Rules of Order. Majority rule and minority rights are maintained as the meeting is organized and conducted. We understand the concept of majority rule, but I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of minority rights. Minority rights are the provisions and policies that are established to protect the rights of the minority, that ensure that the minority has representation, a voice in the meeting, and has access to speak during the debate. The practical considerations of majority rules and minority access include establishing limits on debate and speech, the procedures for proposing motions, debating motions, and voting on motions, and determining the percentages of pro votes needed to approve a motion. All voting members have access to information regarding the content of the meetings. All voting members have the capability and opportunity to join in the discussion, and all reasonable means have been utilized to provide the members access to vote. Maintaining majority rule and minority rights can be accomplished fairly simply. Ensure that all voting members have access to the information regarding the content of the meetings, and that all voting members have the capability and opportunity to join the discussion, at least make a reasonable effort to make sure that all have an opportunity and the technology needed to join the discussion, and that all voting members have the capacity to vote on the topic. Again, it's a reasonable attempt that all voters have an opportunity to vote. When those are met, then you can have an online meeting. But how do we conduct an online meeting and meet those requirements? The following are recommendations and represent best practices for online meetings. And I am assuming that you will select a Zoom technology. There are other technologies that you could select, and they would fit the bill well. I'm familiar with Zoom. We've talked about Zoom and other recordings, so I want to keep with that same theme. It's not like we get any money kicked back from Zoom. They're not our sponsor. They just provide a good service for a large number of participants and have a fairly good track record of delivering on their promises. Here's the process that you would take in order to do an online meeting. First, before the meeting, you have to set the date, you have to set the time, and you have to make sure that it fits within the bylaws requirements. You know, the notice goes out so many Sundays before the voters' meeting, that type of thing. Nothing new there. Open the meeting 1 to 2 hours prior to the formal start to allow a time for troubleshooting, a time for members to log on who may not have regular access or familiar with the technology environment, especially they may not be familiar with Zoom. You know, for many of us who have been on Zoom calls, we know what this is like. Someone logs in and the TV isn't going in the background, or they're tapping at their microphone saying, "Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I can't hear you." And we spend, you know, 5 minutes trying to troubleshoot people's technology. If we're lucky, it's only 5 minutes, 5, 10, 15 minutes before people finally get it going. And of course, that's a meeting of maybe 6 people. If you get a meeting of 100 people or 200 people, you can imagine how difficult it is. So allow extra time at the front end for that type of troubleshooting to occur. Those who are very familiar can log in, check to make sure their technology is working, and log out until the meeting occurs. But that open window allows people a chance to test to see if the system works. Establish an email hotline or a phone hotline for members to call ahead for troubleshooting and testing of the system. Have a phone line published and available during the meeting. Consider using FaceTime to troubleshoot or some other technology. Have 2 to 3 members available to assist during the meeting with requests. These members must not have other responsibilities during the meeting. There is a great feature within Zoom itself called Groups. And you can create a group of one and bring that person having difficulty into that private group, resolve their difficulty in that private group, and then send them back to the main group. And that all happens. It's transparent to the main group. They don't know what's going on. And so that's one solution through Zoom that helps you to do that. In fact, there is a feature built into Zoom called remote support. You have to enable it before the meeting from the Zoom.us website. Now, if you enable that, what it does is it disables the group function. It just creates a quick way of breaking into a separate group. But it works really well. If you're not going to use groups, I would enable that tech support help group, because it becomes very helpful, especially for people who are having more difficulty than normal or are very uncomfortable with the technology. It gives them a private space to resolve their issues before they go back into the rest of the meeting. Consider gathering spare laptops or tablets and have them delivered to members who wish to participate with full video but may not have technology available to them. Consider establishing one or more mock voters meetings for participants to test the technology and to become familiar with the procedures and the policies that will be used. This is also a great way to work out the kinks for your support staff who will be important during the meeting. Also beforehand, send out the agenda with supporting documentation with enough lead time to allow people to read and digest the information. do the minimum amount of business necessary in contrast with a regular face-to-face meeting so that you can keep the Zoom virtual meeting as short as possible to keep people focused. Include in the announcement a clear notice of the meeting and technology requirements needed to participate as a voting member. For example, an abbreviated online version of the annual meeting for the congregation will take place on June 12th at 7 p.m. Voters are encouraged to participate via high-speed internet using the Zoom platform. There will be an option for those accessing the meeting through a telephone to vote and participate in the discussion. For those who do not have a computer or internet access, include a brief explanation of the reason an online meeting was called. The notice should say that the meeting is being held virtually rather than in person because of health concerns created by the pandemic and out of respect for the recommendations of the public health professionals, and that people engage in physical distancing. If local officials have issued orders prohibiting in-person meetings, this should be noted. The board chair should say that the board and congregation look forward to meeting again in person when the public health officials advise this is appropriate. The same notice should be read at the start of the meeting so that the reasons could be recorded in the official minutes of the meeting. Include a statement that the congregation is not responsible for technical difficulties which may prevent an individual from accessing the meeting. Notify the members before and during the meeting that the meeting will be recorded. That's all what you do ahead of time. Now, during the meeting, here's a few suggestions that I have. Record the meeting to the cloud. In Zoom, when you record it to the cloud, it breaks apart the different views and also gives you a recording of the chat so that it becomes an entire record of what took place during the meeting. Whereas if you are running off of memory or you record it to your computer, it's just going to be one video feed and not necessarily include the chat content. Go over the procedures for using the technology. Suggest rules. So I would suggest the following rules for keeping the flow of the meeting helpful and beneficial. Each device will represent only one voting member. If a husband and wife, for instance, use a common laptop to view the meeting, one of them should also use the Zoom app on a smartphone for recording his or her vote, or use the text-to-vote option. Determining rules for limiting the length of time and or the number of times a person can speak during the meeting. Oftentimes in a public meeting, people are intimidated to go to the mic and to speak, and that provides a healthy moderating effect in the length of debate. That doesn't often occur in technologically mediated meetings. Often in the meeting, somebody who normally would be very hesitant to speak is emboldened to speak because they're protected behind the wall of technology. And it's okay to allow them to speak, but you should set limits, time limits, and the number of times that that individual could speak. Otherwise, you will end up with meetings that can go very, very long, longer than normal. The chat feature should not be used to discuss motions. Set the chat feature to only allow discussion between members and a meeting moderator to assist with technological issues. You want to avoid having two conversations happening in the meeting at one time, the conversation that is through the microphone and the conversation that's happening through the chat. If you wish to make a point of order or to be recognized by the chair, use the blue raised hand option found in the lower right hand of the participant window. It might be under the More menu in some platforms. Those accessing the meeting via phone may seek to be recognized by the chair by dialing *9 as you're listening to the meeting. That raises your hand on the technology side of it. Wait until you're recognized by the chair before you speak. Those making a motion will raise the blue hand, again *9 for phone callers, to be recognized. Once the motion has been made and the chair asks for a second, a voting member may raise blue hand *9, indicating that the motion has been seconded. Voting. The green yes button and the red no buttons will be used to indicate a yes or no vote on the motion. Now, you could also use the blue raised hand for voting, and that would make it easier for those accessing the meeting through their phone. They will not be able to raise or click on their yes and no button through their phone, but they can, through *9, raise their hand. So you might simply say, those who are in favor, raise your hand, and people would click the blue hand. Telephone people would do the *9. You would say, I'm closing the vote in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The vote's closed. Count the blue hands and clear them, and then say, those who are opposed, raise your hand, and same thing, after you've closed the vote, count them, and determine if the vote passes or fails. The nice thing about the green yes and the red no button is that the technology automatically counts the votes for you. But those only work for people who are accessing the meeting through the Zoom platform, either on a computer or a smartphone or a tablet. It doesn't work for phone access. So you may choose to use the blue hand. You could also choose to allow text calling, where people call a certain phone number and text yay or nay or y or n and count those. The difficulty with a text calling is it's hard to track who's making the vote. And remember, one of the regulations of virtual meetings is you have to ensure that only voting members are voting. You have to make a reasonable effort at that. And so you have to determine if you're going to provide that easier access for members at the expense of not being certain who's making the vote. It's suggested that during the meeting you do 2 or 3 sample votes at the beginning just to test the system and for people to become comfortable with the voting process. Now let's talk about facilitating technology and the flow during the meeting. I would recommend that you create a team that will support the work of the voters. The team would consist of a co-host that focuses on moderating the participant panel, dealing with noisy participants, muting people, assisting with the chat and participant list, checking for red hands, and a co-host with a text number to facilitate communication with those on the phone, those who are voting through the phone, those who are connecting through the phone, and a person with a number displayed for technical support during the meeting. Somebody that doesn't mind having their phone number available for people to call and say, I'm having trouble getting in, can you help me? And then, of course, the chairman. The team should be on a group chat through text messaging. The chairman should keep an eye on the agenda and the group chat. It's through the group chat that he will know somebody is raising their hands. What you want to avoid is the chairman having to scan the participant list, which is not bad if it's 10 or 15, but if you talk about 100 or 200 voters, it's too much for him to scan that list, scrolling, and run the meeting. So you want him to run the meeting and keep an eye on that chat coming through his phone, and the people who are watching the participant list can text him when a hand is raised. Make certain that the meeting is set up so that people are muted upon entry. You can relabel any connections that are not already clear as members arrive and check them off. For example, if someone calls in through the phone, it's going to give their phone number. You can rename it and give it their name by simply saying, who are you? And recording their name. Now, during the meeting, the chairman should keep the presentations short. Online meetings, online events, and activities happen at a much quicker pace, and people's tolerance for long, lengthy meetings is very short. So you want to keep the meetings as short as possible. Recognize those who are speaking by announcing the member's name. Keep the participants' information of the status of the motion. Be as prepared as possible. Due to the lack of eye contact and body language, it's a good practice to recruit key people to make motions on actions that require a motion. In other words, in a congregational meeting, there are always a few people who know we've discussed this enough and there's a general consensus in the congregation. We just need to get it on to making the vote, and it's not going to happen until someone makes a motion. And so they make a motion. In an online meeting, that process is short-circuited because you don't make eye contact with people. You don't have a sense of of the mood of the congregation. So you need to work with people ahead of time and recruit them to make motions. They're not persuading the congregation to vote one way or another. They're simply bringing the motion to a vote. Unlike a traditional meeting, the more the chairman has scripted to flow the meeting without compromising the opportunity for the members to speak, the more smoothly the flow of the meeting will be for the people who are there, and they're able to actually focus on the business of the meeting. After the meeting, send out to all members a copy of the meeting notes as soon as they're completed to ensure that the actions are clearly understood by all. At the next meeting, accept the minutes of the virtual meeting according to the congregational's usual practice. Now, one area that we could talk a little bit more about is how do you verify those joining the meeting are members? How do you verify that you've got a quorum? As people log into Zoom, they're going to be dumped into the waiting room if you've got that enabled. And in the waiting room, the moderator can ask them their name and check on the roster that they are a voting member and note their participation and then move them into the general assembly room. So it's a bit of a queuing process and processing that can be done on the front end. You could establish two or three people that would have access to the participant list. Everybody in the Zoom will be able to do that. And those people can count the number of members who are present and compare that to the number needed for quorum. For members who are calling in, again, you can ask them for their name, change their phone number to their name after you've verified that they are a voting member. And in that way, you have verified that those who are participating in the meeting are on the roster of voting members. The above recommendations are in the context of the extraordinary circumstances in which we find ourselves. They do not represent a path to permanently adding the option of an online meeting to the congregation's bylaws. That can be done, but with proactive thought given to the minority's right of the membership. If a permanent change is desired, the following question should be addressed in the context of current membership of the congregation. Under what circumstances will an online congregational meeting occur? You want to avoid using an online meeting to inhibit the voice of the minority. Who will determine when the circumstances have been met? How will that determination be communicated to the voters? And what procedures will ensure the issues of surrounding majority rule and minority rights are protected? What procedures will ensure the issues surrounding majority rule and minority rights are protected? If you have additional questions, comments, or would like more assistance preparing for an online meeting, you can certainly reach me at todd.jones@michigandistrict.org, and I would be glad to answer your question if I'm able, have a conversation with you. I might need to tag in with Chad Voldemath. He's the business manager at Michigan District, and he is very knowledgeable and has helped me assemble the information for this podcast. He's a great resource. You could also reach out and connect with him at chad.woltemath@michigandistrict.org. If you go to our district website, you will find a text of this podcast, and it also includes a multi-page resource titled Frequently Asked Questions, Congregational Online Meetings, which go into greater detail on the how-tos of an online meeting. Thank you for your time. God bless you in your day.